You're listening to the FQXI podcast.
It's a good thing there hasn't been any major physics news over the past month or so for us to cover.
No big news. Nothing that grabbed international headlines and featured prominent FQXI members, for instance. Such as the announcement in March that astronomers working on the BICEP 2 experiment had detected the first signs of primordial gravitational waves.
What? Primordial gravitational waves have been detected? And that was announced in March? Nobody tells me anything. But that's huge.
If the finding stands up, then yes, it is. The astronomers discovered evidence of what are known as B-modes in the relic radiation of the Big Bang, the cosmic microwave background. These B-modes are a particular type of twisty pattern in the polarization of photons and are thought to be the signature of the passage of gravitational waves, ripples in the fabric of space-time that were generated in the universe's earliest moments.
Oh, B-modes. I thought they were just listening to me hosting the FQXI podcast.
Oh, very nice.
I could think of a couple of FQXI members who would have been pleased to hear that news. Primordial gravitational waves are said to be the smoking gun of inflation. The idea developed by FQXI's Alan Guth and Andre Linde and others that says that the early universe went through a massive growth spurt, expanding faster than the speed of light, soon after the Big Bang. If only we could chat to one of them and ask them what the implications of this new result are for our understanding of physics.
Well, you're in luck, Brendan, because funnily enough, I did speak with Andre Linde earlier.
What a coincidence! It's like I'm psychic. Or like I'm reading this off a script.
Indeed. Anyway, as I say, earlier I spoke with Andre Linde, one of the founders of inflation theory, now at Stanford University, about what the BICEP 2 announcement means for inflation, string theory, the idea we live in the multiverse, and quantum gravity. I should say, congratulations, this must be a happy time for you. Because, of course, in March, astronomers working with the BICEP 2 telescope located in the South Pole announced to great global fanfare that they had detected primordial gravitational waves for the first time. This has been hailed as the first direct evidence for the theory of inflation, a theory that originated with you and with FQXI member Alan Guth, which suggests that the very early universe went through a period of rapid, faster-than-light expansion. So, can you tell us how that feels?
Oh, well, if anybody brings to you wonderful news, why won't you be excited? Even when the news were brought to me, always I was thinking, if true, okay? So, this state of if true, it may continue for quite a while because this experiment is to be verified, is to be confirmed. We all hope that it will stay the test of time. On the other hand, I would not quite agree that this is the only direct evidence for inflation because I believe there are many. If for whatever reason it is not a correct result, will I be crying? Well, no, not really. I will be a bit disappointed, but I will not change anything in the schedule of my work. But if this result is real, then it gives us quite a lot of additional handles of what inflation is, when exactly it happens, what was the energy scale of inflation. And irrespectively of inflation, if correct, this result would be one of the first important evidence in favor of quantum gravity at work.
When this announcement was made, you know, it was all over the news. It grabbed, you know, the top headlines everywhere. Were you surprised by that, actually, that the public is so excited about this? Was that sort of gratifying?
Oh, I think a part of it goes, here we're talking about the birth of the universe, 1 trillions of a trillions of a trillions of a second after the Big Bang. So it just, well, calls everyone's attention, or something going about the origin of all of us. That's why it's so emotionally important, I guess.
So let's talk about exactly what it was that was detected. So gravitational waves are a sort of a ripple in the fabric of space-time itself, and they were predicted to exist by Einstein's theory of gravity, general relativity. And, you know, they can be created by a cataclysmic event such as two black holes colliding. But in this case in particular, astronomers were looking at the cosmic microwave background, the bath of radiation that's been left over by the Big Bang. And they were looking for imprints in the cosmic microwave background. So like water waves kind of washing over the beach can leave imprints in the sand. You know, these astronomers were hoping to find an imprint of what's known as primordial gravitational waves that were generated in the very early universe, left on the cosmic microwave background itself. And they detected a particular pattern in the polarization of light in the cosmic microwave background that leads them to conclude that they have seen this imprint of primordial gravitational waves. So can you tell us a little bit more about what exactly a primordial gravitational wave is, and what's its relationship to inflation? Why is it considered to be evidence for inflation?
Okay. Then I must first say a few words about what inflation is. So inflation is exponential expansion of the universe at the very first milliseconds of its existence. And every possible non-uniformity of the universe was stretched so far that the universe becomes normal, uniform, homogeneous, which is great. But then we still need to produce galaxies. And these galaxies, surprisingly, have been produced, according to the theory, have been produced from quantum fluctuations, which existed at the first these trillions of a trillions of a trillions of a second after the Big Bang, which looks like science fiction. But apparently it is not, because there are some imprints of this primordial expansion of the universe on cosmic microwave ground radiation. And that is because quantum fluctuations produced at that time made some parts of the sky a little bit warmer and some parts of the sky a little bit colder, just a little bit, just 1/100,000 of its normal temperature. But this is something which experiments have discovered long, long time ago. And now they studied, well, experimentalists studied a much more sophisticated imprint on this cosmic microwave ground radiation, imprint of gravitational waves which have been produced during inflation. So this is imprint of the kind which is very, very difficult to make by any other tools. That is why it was so important to register it, assuming that it indeed has this cosmological origin, which is something which people are going to debate for quite a while yet.
I must pick you up on something else that you said as you were talking earlier. You talked about the implications for quantum gravity.
Actually, the regime where these gravitational waves were produced was exactly the regime which directly tested quantum gravity. Gravitational waves which have been produced there, they are produced because of quantum gravity effects. In essence, what happens is that in the early universe, quanta of gravitational field have been produced. And these quanta after that, They were stretched by rapid expansion, so their wavelengths have grown up, and now we see imprints of this quanta in polarization of cosmic microwave background radiation. So if you wish, what we have right now is magically blown up quantum fluctuations of gravitational field stretched over the whole sky and put it for all of us to enjoy. So that is a very, very direct evidence in favor of our understanding of quantum gravity. So we are testing general relativity and quantum gravity at these huge energies.
You know, one of the things about inflation is that it's sort of a large kind of umbrella term, and there are lots of different possibilities or different models that could explain how inflation occurred. Do these experimental results help us narrow down, perhaps, the correct model of inflation in some way?
Well, we should then start studying from back and past, because maybe 99% of the versions of inflationary theory which have been produced in the past, they have been already disproved. So let me check first what happened before and where we're now and what this new data tell us. Mm-hmm. The first model which had this name was invented by Alan Guth back in 1980. This was called old inflation. It was based on the exponential expansion in the false vacuum state. It was based also on assumption that our universe originally was hot and then it supercooled. And after that, we had a stage of inflation. And in 83, I suggested a version which I called chaotic inflation. And it was much, much simpler. No need for thermal initial conditions in the universe. In fact, they made everything more complicated. And this scenario was extremely simple, but psychologically very difficult to accept because the hot Big Bang was not necessary there. I think that it is so deeply ingrained in our psyche that it is still psychologically difficult for people to say that Big Bang does not mean necessarily high temperature in the beginning, that everybody thinks that our universe was born like a terrorist explosion, very, very hot. But apparently it is actually makes our construction of inflationary theories more difficult rather than easier. It seems that this kind of model right now is favored both by Planck data and by data by many other previous experiments, but especially by BICEP2 data.
So let's talk about the multiverse. Are we taking this as good news for the multiverse? Or for people who love the multiverse, I guess, or who want a multiverse to exist.
Yeah, it's like saying that there is no bad publicity. Every publicity is good for something. Any support to the idea of inflation is good for multiverse in the following sense. If you are just talking about the idea of a multiverse in general, we're talking about different mathematical constructs, different realities, different maybe universes, but this is a little bit too abstract. It is general, it is powerful, it's very, very important, but it's a little bit too abstract to help others. Like, think about different mathematical realities. It's a little bit further away from your heart. It is better if you know something simpler than that. And the simpler image would be our Earth is covered by ocean and by dry land. This dry land is divided into different countries with different laws and stuff. Now imagine that you have this Earth. This is like one single body, but you just made it billions of a billions of a billions times larger. Then each country would be so immense that you will never travel to any other countries. Then you look at it and say, okay, I live in a country where they speak Chinese and I go to a different part of the country and they all speak Chinese. And I will then conclude that all our Earth is, well, populated by people who only speak Chinese. That is until I travel to other place. But if the size of the country is exponentially large, I will never travel to any other place. Then I will start imagining that there must be some principle of nature that all people must speak Chinese because this is the only language which exists in nature. So what inflation tells us that if you take a universe and it may be from the very beginning consistent from different countries, if you wish, then when you explode it exponentially, then these countries are preserved, but they become so large that loss of nature will be realized in a totally different way in these different countries. But this is possible only if there is a mechanism which explodes our universe, which makes it huge. And the only mechanism which we know which does it, it's inflation. So every argument in favor of inflation opens further, more widely, the doors towards the thinking about the multiverse.
It sounds a little bit sad that we might never know the laws of nature in these other sort of universes or areas that are separated from ours. But would there still be meta laws that governed the whole multiverse that we could hope to one day uncover from within our universe? Or do you think there's just no way that we could ever know these overarching laws?
Well, first of all, you never say never. Second, you're certainly right that we might find some universal law describing everything, and this might be even possible that this will be the only logically possible law. What, however, it would not really entail is the necessity of one particular realization of the law. If you think about water, for example, water can be liquid, water can be solid, water can be vapor. The same water, but it may look differently depending on circumstances. So what we are talking about right now is that, for example, you have a string theory. And string theory, we thought, if we say these magic words, then you know everything. But we found that these laws can be realized in 10 to the 500 or maybe more different ways. What I'm talking about is not that we have really fundamentally different physical laws operating somewhere. It is just different realizations of the same law. Just as I said in the example of water, water can be liquid, water can be solid. It does not contradict any intuition which we have. So yes, there is a hope that even study the universe locally, we can still learn quite a lot about this underlying theory.
Well, now, you've mentioned string theory, and I've heard some conflicting opinions about what this result means for string theory. And I guess, in particular, people were a little bit surprised when this result came back. Not only that the astronomers had managed to detect this signal, but kind of the dramatic size of the signal was perhaps something that, you know, they weren't predicting based on earlier results that came from the Planck data.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, people have sort of been looking at that and trying to look at the size of the signal and compare it to predictions from different kinds of models. And I've heard some people saying, well, you know, this doesn't bode well for the predictions that were made by various string theory models. But then I've heard other people come in and say, well, yes, but it's fine for other ones. So can you sort of clear up a little bit, I guess, about, first of all, the tension with the Planck data, if you see that there is tension there, and, you know, what it means for string theory?
I guess some of the people who are saying some, negative stuff about string theory with respect to this data may even base it on my own talk, which was given at MIT next day after the announcement. I gave their talk and I have shown the table of different results from the recent review on string theory inflation. And inside this table, there were 10 different lines, and all of them predicted this amplitude of gravitational waves at the level 10 minus 10. Meanwhile, the result right now, if correct, it is approximately 0.2, so this is a big disagreement. But not everybody notices that there is some particular model where I had a smiley face near it, which is a model proposed by Eva Silverstein, a professor of physics at Stanford University, together with several collaborators, which predict this amplitude of this R, which is a ratio of tensor to scalar perturbations in inflation, approximately about 0.1. And it's absolutely possible, I'm sure, to have different versions of string theory which predict the amplitude of the signal of this type. The fact that one of the theories which I like, even before all of these experiments, I liked Eva's model much more than many others. So right now, these models is singled out by experimental data, and that's great.
Let's talk a bit more about what this tells us about the scale of inflation, or when inflation began. You know, assuming that this result from the BICEP 2 telescope remains as they've announced it and it's not modified in any way.
Mm-hmm.
You know, what does this tell us about the early universe? And I guess in particular, you know, we talk about the grand unification scale. That's an energy scale in the early universe above which it is believed the electromagnetic force, the weak force, and the strong force were unified. How is that relevant to inflation, or what's the relationship now that we're seeing according to these experimental results?
The question about relation between grand unification scale and the present observation, well, is something that I was asked immediately after the announcement. Some person from Newsweek asked me, what does this experiment tell us about grand unification? And she was kind of disappointed when I answered it, that it tells us about grand unification absolutely nothing at all.
Oh,
and
dear.
She said, what? No, it could not be. And so I could not understand the question, and I understood it only later. When you calculate this energy scale of inflation and you compare it with the expected scale of grand unification, they kind of come close. And in this sense, they suggest again that there may be some link between the scale of inflation and scale of grand unification. So I've heard many talks by different people that look at that, here it is what we have. It is exactly the grand unification scale. But the question which I have there instantly is the following. Let's consider the simplest model of inflation, which may be confirmed by the present data. The simplest version of it is my chaotic inflation model, and the simplest version of it is my quadratic chaotic inflation model with a quadratic potential. So in this model, from the moment which we observe right now, inflation still continued, and produced perturbations on a smaller and smaller scale until inflation finally ended. So during this, the energy scale of inflation have changed precisely 60 times. So which one of these scales should be related to grand unification scale? So making any relation between scale of inflation and scale of grand unification, you may try to do it, but I just hardly can imagine any theory where this relation can be realistically put to work.
And I guess the reason that I was sort of asking you about this was once again to ask you about the Planck results and the WMAP results, because mm-hmm. is it fair to say that they were not pointing towards, you know, the same kinds of models that BICEP 2 is?
They were pointing out to different classes of models. So Planck results, Planck data disfavored large gravitational waves. BICEP data favored the models which predict large amplitude of gravitational waves. Which one is right? And that's very hard for me to say because I am not an observer. I know that BICEP data are more surgically correct. They are more precise in what they are measuring. They study, however, only a small fraction of the sky. And you can always find some surprises which may inadvertently occur in some particular part of the sky. There could be something else which we do not know what it is. There is some tension between all of these results. I do hope that these BICEP results are correct, but let's just wait. One of the things which we should be waiting for are some Planck data about the polarization. Planck has its own strengths. It covers all the sky, so it would be extremely important to have data from both experiments come to peace, and we will hopefully see this coming in half a year to year.
And we have seen people kind of coming in and suggesting that maybe we could be misinterpreting effects from, you know, galactic contamination or something like that. So I guess there is an element of waiting and seeing what happens next.
My feeling is that there is a good chance that the signal which they have found is real. Well, I'm practically sure that the signal is real. The interpretation of it, the one which they suggested, seemed to be most natural and most convincing. But in order to totally, absolutely exclude any other interpretations of their data, this is something about which people would need to think and to discuss and to debate and suggest their own alternatives to this interpretation. But this, I hope, within half a year or so, a year, we'll have a more clear picture of.
Thank you very much. That was absolutely wonderful.
Okay, let's hope that it all stands well, and it will be still interesting at the time when you put it on the web.
I'll try and put it up next week.
Oh, then next week, next week, probably, yes.
<All right. laughs> Hopefully we won't have any dramatic retractions by then.
Yeah, but, you know, just earlier there was this paper by some people who say there are magnetic loops in the sky, and this bicep was just on the way of one of these magnetic loops, and then it's discussed right now in different places on the web. So there will be lots and lots of interesting stuff and suggestions like that before we have a full clarity of everything.
Well, that's how it should be, I guess. I mean, you know, for something like this to stand up, you want to throw everything you can at it and see if it still sticks. And if it does, then you've got a really solid result.
So, yeah.
Well, congratulations again and have a good day.
Okay, thank you. Bye-bye.
That was Andre Linde chatting with Zia. We're also linking to articles about the possibility that the Bicep 2 signal isn't actually from primordial gravitational waves, but from other sources, such as radio loops, radio emission possibly from ancient supernovae. On the website, www.fqxi.org/community/podcast.
Also on the podcast page, there's a lovely video showing Linde's reaction when he first hears news about the discovery.